Joining me on the line now is a glaciologist turned writer, Sarah Boone. Now, I love the fact that she's a glaciologist. I find that so incredibly mind-blowingly fascinating. I cannot wait to pick her brains all about that. However, her book, which is called Meltdown, The Making and Breaking of a Field Scientist, isn't just about the raw nuts and bolts of working in the Arctic. It's more about her journey with mental health and the balance of finding mental health in such a field. Sarah, hello, and thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you for having me.
So the title of your book is really evocative, Meltdown. It's a fantastic play on words as well, because you talk about your role as a scientist in the Arctic, but it's a very personal book. It's about your personal journey. So could you just tell us a little bit about the title and what it means to you?
Well, the title basically means to me that I was a field scientist for 12 years, and then I had a meltdown at the end of the 12 years and ended up with a mental health issue. So meltdown really refers to that mental health issue. And making and breaking kind of shows how I developed as a field scientist and then how I broke, basically, as a field scientist.
And was it your role as a field scientist that you believe caused this meltdown? Or did the meltdown just happen at a time when you happened to be working in that field?
That's a tough question. I ask myself that regularly. Would I still have had a meltdown if I was working in a different job? And I think maybe the environment exacerbated it, but I think even if I was doing something else, I probably would have had the same breakdown.
Fair enough. And what brought you sort of to that conclusion? If you don't, you know, well, obviously you're talking about this book, so hopefully you don't mind going into the sort of emotional questions and heartfelt questions on this. But, you know, for you, what was that experience of the meltdown like, and why do you feel that perhaps it would have happened no matter what?
Well, it was pretty terrible. I ended up originally with a diagnosis of major depression, and none of the medications that I tried would help me. And that was because I was misdiagnosed, and the medications I was being given were not designed to help my bipolar 2 diagnosis. And so I got proper medications and things kind of seemed to settle down a bit, even though I still have highs and lows. I think that it's important to talk about mental health issues in academia because nobody talks about them. And so that was my goal with my book, was to bring that out.
So how, I mean, if you can build us a picture of the environment that you're working in, and I don't necessarily just mean the Arctic and the ice. I mean, the people around you, the peers, the academic community, what's it like?
It's pretty cutthroat. I was hired at the same time as another person, and he was very into getting first author papers and getting work out there and trying to do novel things. And that's really, he basically focused on himself and what he could get ahead with. And it worked for him because that's how the system works. You kind of have to be ambitious and you have to be willing to run over other people, and you have to not worry so much about whether people like you or not.
Wow, that is harsh. And that's also maybe a bit at, and correct me if I'm wrong, but at juxtaposition with, if you're a scientist going to the Arctic, I imagine you're studying things like climate change, how to make the world a better place, what we can do to for the betterment of society or people or the planet. And how does that align, you know, their values that a person may hold if they're going into the scientific field, especially in such areas, values versus, you know, personal goals and personal ambitions? How do those two things run alongside each other?
Well, a lot of my work wasn't dedicated exactly to climate change. It was sort of adjacent to climate change. So a lot of my work on Arctic glaciers was about how they respond to weather. And so it would be climate change if I had checked how the weather changed over, say, 100 years, but I was only looking at weather over, say, a 3-year period. So I wasn't necessarily working in a climate change space, though I did argue that my work would help with our understanding of climate change. And so it's hard sometimes because you have these values that you're concerned about climate change and you know how bad things can get as a scientist. And so it's really hard to hold that information while also studying it. And it's hard because a lot of scientists say that science is apolitical. But I think if you worry about climate change, that's political right in itself. And so researchers who study climate change, I think, are more political than researchers who don't, because they realize the magnitude of the problem and the lack of movement on behalf of governments to do something about it.
And out of curiosity, what sort of environment does that create amongst you scientists altogether? Because you're sort of like keepers of knowledge. You know a lot more stuff than people like me. You know, your regulars listening to this show. When you're sat around having a chit chat, are there like taboo topics? Like, oh, this is getting a bit political, or this is encroaching on someone's value system. We don't talk about that. We just talk about the numbers because we're scientists and we don't go into that. Or, of course, but you're also all people. How do you chat about those things amongst yourselves?
Well, it's a real debate. I mean, there are some people who say we are scientists. We just stick to the data, look at the numbers and put our research out there. But there are others who say we know these things that other people don't know about. And we have to get the word out because people are concerned about climate change. So there's kind of this dichotomy between the two types of scientists. One who want to say, nope, it's just numbers. We don't comment on policy or anything. And then another group that say, no, we have a responsibility to say something because of what we know.
Yeah. Okay. Absolutely. Well, thanks for answering that. And I'd also like to hear just a bit about, like, a description of the types of places that you've worked in and the more extreme environments and more extreme experiences. Because again, you've lived some things, been to some places that most people will never imagine even setting a big toe in their whole life.
Yeah, so the Arctic was probably the biggest place that I went to that was most remote. There were only 4 of us in camp, so we had to rely on each other. The glacier we went to had probably only been visited by about 12 people before, so it was very remote. We only had contact with the outside world through a 2-way radio and a sat phone when we needed it. We climbed on the glacier every day. We traveled on the glacier every day. We measured things. And some of the things that happened or that had to do with the glacier plumbing system is we would feel the glacier move under our feet, like a freight train running or a subway running under your feet. So that was probably the most remote place that I was at. The second most remote was in the North Coast Mountains of British Columbia. And so I flew into a glacier to set up some weather stations. And it was pretty remote. You could only access it by helicopter. And there were bears and other things. When I came back to rescue my weather stations, we had to chase a brown bear away from one of those stations because he was busy demolishing it. So with the chopper, we had to kind of scare him away.
Wow. And how do you feel that environments like that, and looking back on it now as well, have an impact on your mental health? Is it something that you're like, wow, I survived this amazing thing, I'm very proud of myself? Or do you feel like it is so remote and you're so disconnected from your social networks and your support systems that it just chips away at you?
I would say that being in the field is the best thing that ever happened to me. So being in the Arctic, especially my first field season, I had knee problems, so I couldn't walk on the glacier. So I was camped in front of the glacier and I was doing all my colleagues' chemical analyses while they were on the ice looking at my systems and streams. And it was perfect because I could do all their analysis. And when I was done, I could sit down and write. And so I kind of had this dual role while I was down there. And I have to say that it was a perfect environment for writing. So it was a good juxtaposition.
And so at what point did you feel your meltdown coming on? Was there just a moment, boom, light switch moment that everything changed for you? Or did you feel it coming on slowly?
I kind of felt it coming on slowly. And then it kind of sped up and was fully on me within a couple of months. And that's when, like I said, they were treating me for major depression, which it wasn't. And yeah, it was pretty sudden and unexpected and, at the time, untreatable.
Which must have been terrifying, I imagine.
Yeah, it was, because when you think about it, as a scientist, your mind is your life, because you're using your mind all the time to answer questions, to study things, to figure out how to do things in the field. And so for me, it was doubly devastating because my mind wasn't working. It was my mind that was the problem, and that's what I relied on for all my work. So that was really devastating.
And in what way would you describe your mind not working? What does that mean? And what other symptoms did you feel?
So what it means is that I have cognitive difficulties. I have problems coming up with words, with finishing sentences. I have some memory loss. I have a hard time remembering what I've talked about in the last couple of days. I have to sleep a lot. I get tired very easily. I don't have a lot of energy. If I want to do any writing, I have about 1 to 2 hours a day where I can do that before I get too tired. So I would say I have a certain number of energy units in a day. And once I use them up, that's it. I have to go to bed, or I have to just sit and have a drink of water and just relax.
And how did the scientific community, your colleagues, your peers react to what was going on with you?
Well, it was kind of weird. My supervisor, the dean of the department, he was very good. He was, because I had to go to him to ask for a medical leave. And he was very good, very clear, very patient, and very understanding. Once I got diagnosed, I still had one more conference to go to. And so I went to this conference, and a lot of people had heard that I was leaving, or that I was taking a break from academia. And so a lot of people asked me, well, what's wrong? What's going on? How come you're leaving? And I didn't want to talk about mental illness because of the stigma around it. So I just said, well, we don't really know. We're going to do some more tests and then we'll figure it out. So I didn't talk about it because I was afraid that my peers would not laugh at me, but just kind of shake their heads and say, oh, Sarah just doesn't feel good, so she's not doing academia anymore.
And since publishing this book, how have they responded? You know, there must be people who knew you and have crossed paths with you. What sort of feedback are you getting?
I haven't got a lot of feedback yet. There's one professor who had contacted me and said that he really liked my book. And some colleagues that used to be in academia really like it. And they say that it really represents what happens in academia. So I haven't got a ton of feedback from colleagues, but I have gotten a bit, and they like it.
Yes. Yeah. So what you've had is, you've definitely hit the nail on the head by the sounds of it to the people that have read it who are in your field. Why did you feel that it was important to write this book? Therapeutic for you, and you love writing, or did you have a bigger message?
I love writing, but the bigger message was, every time I talked about the things I had done in the field, people were like, wow, that's really amazing. Mm. And I would think, oh, well, that's just what I did. It doesn't feel like it's amazing. And then as I talked about it more, I thought, well, maybe I have a story to tell here. Maybe I can share with people what I did, and I can share my struggle between writing and science, and I can share my eventual meltdown and tell that story so that they understand what we do as academic scientists and what the environment is like as an academic scientist.
And so the book isn't actually written necessarily for academic scientists. Is it written for the layperson to give them an understanding, you know, in an easier to read sort of way?
Yes. Yeah. So when I think about my book, I think there's a whole bunch of audiences, but the one is my colleagues so that they understand what happened. And the other is the general public to understand what happens as a field scientist and what can happen to you over time. I find that people, everyday people, really like the book because they say that they can understand the science. So I've written it in a way that it's accessible to the general public.
Absolutely. Well, thank you. I've got to say that you really stand out as being someone who is very brave in both the things that you've done, you know, the environments that you've been to, the things that you've studied, the way that you've pushed yourself, but also sharing such a heartfelt story. I think that's got to be one of your most defining characteristics. And I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us this afternoon.
Well, I'm glad I could talk to you too.
So that was Sarah Boone. Her book is called Meltdown, The Making and Breaking of a Field Scientist. You can find it on Amazon or the Talk Radio Europe bookshop.
TRE, your voice in Spain.